This is again Bhagavad Gita chapter 3 text 9 entitled Karma Yoga, and the translation by Srila Prabhupada is: work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. Otherwise, work causes bondage in this material world. Therefore, O son of Kunti, perform your prescribed duties for his satisfaction, and in that way you will always remain free from bondage. Kindly repeat: work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu
has to be performed.
Otherwise,
work causes bondage
in this material world. Therefore, O son of Kunti, perform your prescribed duties
for his satisfaction.
And in that way, you will always remain free from bondage. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Since one has to work even for the simple maintenance of the body, the prescribed duties for a particular social position and quality are so made that the purpose can be fulfilled. Yajna means Lord Vishnu, or sacrificial performances. All sacrificial performances also are meant for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu. The Vedas enjoin Yajna Vai Vishnu. In other words, the same purpose is served whether one performs prescribed yajnas or directly serves Lord Vishnu. Krishna consciousness is therefore performance of yajna as it is prescribed in this verse. The Varnashram institution also aims at satisfying Lord Vishnu. Varnashram acharapata purushena paraha puman Vishnur aradhyate. That's from Vishnu Purana 3.8.8. Therefore, one has to work for the satisfaction of Vishnu. Any other work done in this material world will be a cause of bondage, for both good and evil work have their reactions, and any reaction binds the performer. Therefore, one has to work in Krishna consciousness to satisfy Krishna or Vishnu. And while performing such activities, one is in a liberated stage. This is the great art of doing work. And in the beginning, this process requires very expert guidance. One should therefore act very diligently under the expert guidance of a devotee of Lord Krishna, or under the direct instruction of Lord Krishna himself, under whom Arjuna had the opportunity to work. Nothing should be performed for sense gratification, but everything should be done for the satisfaction of Krishna. This practice will not only save one from the reaction of work, but also gradually elevate one to transcendental loving service of the Lord, which alone can raise one to the kingdom of God. Yajnarthat karmanyatra lokoyam karma bandhana tadartham karma kaunteya mukta sangha samachara. This is one of the most famous verses of Bhagavad Gita. How many days have we allotted to this verse?
20.
This year only.
Sorry?
This year only.
No, we could easily go for a week. Just from the, I mean, I looked through several commentaries by predecessor acharyas on this verse, and although they all say remarkably the same thing, essentially, they all say it in remarkably different ways. And that alone is very beneficial, to hear the same thing restated in a slightly different manner. It's very beneficial for those of us who are just aspiring for bhakti, because we don't really know what bhakti is yet, as long as we're in the conditional stage of life, at least. I'm speaking for myself. But therefore, we have this word anuvada. Anuvada means translation. Actually, anuvada more literally means to retell something, and to tell it in a way that is subordinate to the original, or that follows faithfully with the original thing, anuvada. So, hopefully we'll give some anuvadas here. As I said, many acharyas have commented here, and they've all said very remarkable things, so I'll try to remark on a few of them. I don't know that we'll have time, but we'll try. In the beginning, Ramanujacharya, he writes, Eva tarhi dravyarjana dehe karmano ahankara mamakaradi sarvendriya vyakulata garbhatvena asya purushasya karma vasanaya bandhanam bhavishyati. If I perform activities, then I'm going to be impelled by my proclivity for fruitive action, and given the fact that my senses are all out of order and that I'm acting under the bodily concept of life, then I will certainly be bound. It's to answer this doubt that Krishna speaks this verse. Yajñārtha is the key word here. In the last verse also, 3.8, we also learned that Krishna is not encouraging just any kind of action. He is encouraging a specific kind of action only. What kind of action did Krishna mention in the last verse? Niyatam Dharma. We, many of us in the modern age, don't know what Niyatam Karma actually is. The reason that we don't know what Niyatam Karma is primarily that Niyatam Karma is something that is passed down socially from generation to generation, and unless our forefathers have practiced this, or unless we've inherited it from the predecessors, then we don't have a very clear idea, and the Shastra cannot help us that much, because the Shastra cannot codify everything, Mahabharata says. That's why we have gurus, and that's one of the very important functions that a spiritual master performs. And therefore it's significant that we heard Srila Prabhupada tell us in his second paragraph here. One should therefore act very diligently under the expert guidance of a devotee of Lord Krishna, etc. He has pointed out that it's a great art to do work, and in the beginning this process requires very expert guidance. It means we have to know, or the persons that are guiding us have to know, first of all, what is Niyatam Karma? In that sense, karma doesn't just mean any activity. Why has Srila Prabhupada therefore translated the word karma here as work? Who has some ideas? Why does Prabhupada translate it as work instead of a specific kind of work that we're getting at here? The problem, huh?
Everything we do is work.
Everything we do is work? That's correct, and that is certainly the conception that this word will give us. Work means anything that you do.
The living entity cannot stop from acting.
A living entity cannot stop from acting, that's a justification for the same idea. What else?
There's spiritual work and material work.
There's spiritual work and material work. We're getting pretty warm here. Anything else?
There's three kinds of karma, vikarma, and dakarma.
Very good. I like this answer. She says there are three categories. We know they're mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. There's akarma, there's karma, and there's vikarma. So they're all actions, they're all work, but they're not all the same. They have opposite results in some cases. So Prabhupada has ignored the inadequacy of the English language in his translation here, and he simply, for the sake of general understanding, as is his priority, he simply translates the word as work. But it actually means something much, much deeper than that, and it's a very important distinction that we must make if we're to understand this verse. So, karma means, in a strict sense, karma actually means only dharma. Because if it's not dharma, there are only two kinds of work in this world. Well, three, that's for what she said. But the third one's not really in this world, so therefore in this world there are two kinds of action. There is dharma and there's adharma. In other words, there's karma and there's vikarma. So that's a very important thing to consider. So, Ramanujacharya continues, he says, Yajnyadi shastriya karma shesha bhuta drivya janadehe karmano anyatradmiya prayojana shesha bhute karmani kriyamani ayam loka karma bandhano bhavati. This bondage that we speak of here, it will come about in this world automatically if we are performing activities that he calls atmiya prayojana. Atmiya prayojana. So prayojana is a word that we hear sometimes in Krishna consciousness. It's actually a very important word in our theological system. What does prayojana mean?
Good.
One's goal. So atmiya prayojana. If your goal is yourself, then that's what we're talking about here. That's one option. And the other thing, the other option is yajnyadi shastriya karma means activities that are prescribed in shastra, such as sacrifices and so many other things. This is Ramanujacharya's viewpoint. He says another significant thing. Tatratma prayojana sadhana tayaya sangastasmat sangat muktaha. We have the phrase here in the verse, mukta sangha sam achara, right? That's the last line. So why is Krishna mentioning this mukta sangha? He's mentioning mukta sangha in order to illustrate for us that we should be freed from associating with this concept of me, I, me, mine, calculation. What's in it for me? What am I going to? Any time we enter a given situation, we immediately scan the scenario and start assessing, calculating in terms of profit and loss. Is it not? This is our mentality in the material world. As fruitive workers, we are fruitive workers either of a pious sort, or more often than not in modern society, we are fruitive workers of the impious sort. We are vikarmis. That is the default position that we enter into this consideration from. And we need to know that, because it's a deficiency. When you go to college, if you've not taken your foreign language requirements in high school, and you want to take a foreign language in college, which you generally have to do, then you have to take that language. And you don't get credit for that course, because it's understood that you are removing your deficiency. Right? Sometimes, therefore, it also seems that in Krishna consciousness, we're not necessarily getting anywhere, because really the powerful process of Krishna consciousness is for many of us. I'm speaking from my own perspective. It is elevating us only to the platform of human life, first and foremost. It takes 10 or 20 years sometimes. One of my godbrothers, a very successful preacher, mind you, told me that it takes 10 or 15 or 20 years just to elevate a person to the platform of acting like a normal human being. If those who were recently in Mayapur also heard Devamrita Swami say much the same thing. That's why we have a leadership crisis in ISKCON. Nobody wants to be a leader, because leader means a zookeeper. Because you deal with people that have no concept of what it means to have a normal family or a normal upbringing. 47% of the university-educated students in North America have been clinically diagnosed with at least one psychological disorder. Therefore, he says, we pick the low-lying fruits. Ever wonder why ISKCON is 100, maybe not 100, but at least 90% Indian worldwide? Because they're stable, they're financially secure, they're civilized, they have some sense of dharma. They're easy. We pick the low-lying fruits. We just collect money, you don't have to maintain nothing. But a person who's grown up with, say, two mommies his entire life and no daddy, or a person who, you know, his parents have been married six times as well, and therefore doesn't even believe in marriage anymore. You have to overcome all these deficiencies. This is what Krishna calls in chapter 7 moha dvandva. Dvandva moha. Anybody know that verse? Vijaya does, I'm sure. He's walking Bhagavad Gita. No. Yesham dvandagatam papam jananam punya karmana te dvandva moha nirmukta bhajante mantradhavrataha. Krishna says the persons who engage in my devotional service firmly, those who can sustain a mature commitment to pure devotional service, they are the persons who are freed from the dualistic illusions that result from so many impious activities. And we have to deal with this. If we are preaching to people outside of the South Asian subcontinent and outside of South Asian ethnicity, and that is in fact a very primary goal of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Srila Prabhupada very clearly intended that this society in America should be comprised mostly of Americans, in Russia should be comprised mostly of Russians, in China should be comprised mostly of Chinese, in Africa, Africans, Australia, Australians, ityadi. So we have to consider this. It's a big problem. I suggest if you're interested in this topic in general, you can listen to some of Devamrita Swami's recent lectures on the topic, because it's a major concern for him. There are others as well. But anyway, my point is this. Mukta Sangha in this verse means to be freed from not only the desire for this fruit of activity, but also that contamination that we mentioned in Bhagavad Gita chapter 7, text 28. So, he says further, yajnadi bhi karma bhir aradhita parama purushosya anadi kala pravritta karma vasanam samuchidya avyakulatavalokanam dadati. The idea here is that if we instead engage in pious activity, but only for the sake of Lord Vishnu, anyone who has had any exposure to any kind of pious activity of the Vedic sort in this life, you have probably experienced that when you go to any puja or any even marriage or any auspicious ritualistic function in Hinduism, for example, at the end you will always hear the priest sing Shri Krishna Madhapanamastu, which means let this be an offering to Lord Krishna. Because it is actually understood, even within the Purvi Mimamsa school, or even within the Karmakanda school, that there is a Supreme Personality of Godhead, or even that his name is Krishna, and that he's the ultimate enjoyer, just like Krishna himself tells us in Bhagavad Gita, Poktaram Yajnatapasam Saravaloka Maheshwara Ityadi. You all know the verse. So, these are some of Ramanuja Acharya's comments. Madhvacharya, he points out for us that the previous text also mentioned Niyatam Karma, as I've already mentioned. And he specifies just what that means. For example, Varnashram Dharma. And for another example, Sandhya Vandanam. Sandhya Vandanam, those who are twice initiated, they chant Gayatri Mantra. For those who are smartas, also they worship their forefathers, and so many, they do other rituals as well. That's what we're talking about here. So, yajñartham ayam loka. These words overturn the notion that one has to give up all activity whatsoever because all action binds one to samsara. No, not all action. If you take that action that is pious and you offer it to Lord Vishnu, then that action takes you out of karma altogether. There's no bondage. This is the important thing. But a key word here is yajna. Yajna, therefore, as per Shatapatha Brahmana, 1.11 means yajno vai Vishnur Devata, as Prabhupada is also quoted in his purport. Many of our acharyas have repeated the same thing as I mentioned earlier. Madhvacharya here is one of them. So he gives us some further examples. What does it mean to work without attachment? What is this Mukta Sangha concept all about? He mentions in Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, text number 71, which we can just quickly look at. Yeah, actually the edition that I was using is the wrong one. Oh yeah, here we go. Nirmamo nirahankara sa shantim adhikacchati. A person who has given up all desires for sense gratification, who lives free from desires, who has given up all sense of proprietorship and is devoid of false ego, he alone attains real peace. He doesn't say he gives up the activity, he gives up the desire. That is the Mukta Sangha that we're talking about here. What else does Madhvacharya tell us? In chapter 18, text number 12, we get further examples. There Krishna says, Anishtam ishtam mishramcha trividham karmana phalam. If we're talking about the fruits of activity, they're listed here as three. Ishtam means what you want. Anishtam means what you don't want. And mishram means mixed. If we're completely in the sattva guna, generally we get everything we want. It happens as if automatically. Therefore we get puffed up and foolish, and eventually we blow it again. Because we assume that I'm just so great that everything is coming to me naturally because I'm so wonderful and pious. And it can never not be this way. But mark well, my friends, it certainly can be otherwise. Even if you're sitting on top of the world, it certainly can, and it certainly will be otherwise. It's just a matter of time. Because Kalidas, the famous Sanskrit poet, he says in his Meghaduta, it's like fate is like the spokes on a wheel. When a wheel is spinning fast, wheels, especially in America, they have many, many, many spokes. And when a wheel is spinning very fast, you can't even see the individual spokes. What to speak of calculating which one is on top at a given split second. That is the significance of this karma that we get so much enwrapped in and so much bewildered by. So, what goes up must come down, as we say. And even if we're sitting on top of the world, we're going to be underneath it all in due course of time. Likhitam abhilalate pranchitam kasamartha. Whatever is written on your forehead, you cannot escape that. Even if you are the sun who illumines all beings in this world and by whose grace all life is possible. But Rahu will eat you one day. You have to be swallowed by Rahu when it's your time. That Rahu means an eclipse. Therefore we call it Rahu Grahanam, or Surya Grahanam, Chandra Grahanam. Grahana means he grabs you and he swallows you. Even if you're the moon, same thing. So everybody has to suffer. We heard this morning Prabhupada was quoting that Bengali proverb. What was it? Jodi Jao Bangle Bangye. Anybody remember what he said? Yeah. Anyway, I don't remember. Wherever you go in Bengal, still your forehead will go with you. You can't get away from your karma. You can run, but you can't hide. So these demigods are very expert. They're working on behalf of the Lord. You cannot escape them. They will get you. That's called duratyaya, Mama Maya Duratyaya, Krishna says elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita. Alright, so Anishtam Mishtam Mishram Cha, that's what he's talking about here. Yeah, let's turn off our cell phones, everyone. Including me. Okay. H6, he says, is another example of, we're talking about examples of what it means to work without attachment. Etani api tu karnamani sangam kyatva phalani cha kartavyani te me parha nishchitam matam uttamam. This is a very strong verse. It's not a very well known verse. It's not something that's very often repeated. But it's a very, very strong evidence. Listen closely what he says. All these activities, he's mentioned so many different ways that people perform yajna, karma, tapas, etc. All these activities should be performed without attachment or any expectation of result. They should be performed as a matter of duty. O son of Purita, that is my final opinion. And this is in chapter 18, the same chapter in which Krishna himself says, Sarvatharman Paratijya, Mamekam Sharanam Braja. There's not a contradiction between these two, although it appears so. We can speak more on that in a little while. So Madhvacharya, finally he goes on to say that when the Shrutis appear to discourage fruitive work, not fruitive work, but pious work, shastric enjoined activity, in other words, niyatam karma. For example, in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, where it's 1.5.2, where he says, one should not become a performer of ishtis, means these desired results. It doesn't apply here. It does not apply here. Because here it's understood that we're talking only about activities that are offered to Vishnu. Yajna-artha means Vishnu's artha, for the purpose of Vishnu. This is the essential qualification. Sridhar Swami says, this world is bound by actions other than sacrifice. Therefore, you should perform your niyatam karmas just like everybody else does, the pious ones at least, but for his sake and free of attachment. You must put this qualification, free of attachment. If you do not put this qualification free of attachment, then you re-enter the realm of fruitive activity. And you also thereby poison the Varnashram system, which is exactly how the Varnashram system has become so perverse. This so-called caste system that we denigrate. What is the basis of that caste system? It is selfishness. What Ramanujacharya calls atmiya prayojana karma. Activity that is only, what's in it for me only. Yes, it's pious, but I'm doing that just to keep my nose clean, karmically, so I don't have to go to hell. But my real interest is me. I want to go to heaven, or whatever it is, whatever it is that you want. So, what else does he say? Sankhyas tu sarvam api karma bandhagatvat nakaryam iti ahuh. The Sankhyas, they say that any kind of activity is going to bind you. This is the argument that we're dealing with here. The different acharyas are approaching it in different ways. So, first thing Sridhar Swami points out in his Subodhani Vyakhya on Bhagavad Gita is that the Sankhyas will say that any kind of karma will cause bondage. Tannik nirakurvannaha. He speaks this verse, yajnyartha, in order to overturn that idea. It's a false notion. Yatroatra Vishnuhu. Here, the word is used Vishnu. Yajnyo vai Vishnuhu iti shrutehe. Same thing Madhvacharya told us. This yajna means Vishnu. In this verse, yajna means Vishnu. Yajna is also one of the thousand names of Vishnu. Particularly if we read the pastimes of Lord Varahadev, and you read the prayers that are offered to him very carefully, you will see that the Lord there is quite often referred to as yajna, or there's quite often some mention of yajna. Because Lord Varahadev himself is specifically a form of the Lord that is identified with yajna. There is another incarnation of the Lord, also named Yajna, whose form is different, but in this way, we're just demonstrating how Yajna actually means Lord Vishnu. So, tad aradhanarthat karnamanavanyatra tadekam vina ayam loka karnamabandhanaha. The idea is that when we perform activities that are otherwise binding in this world, but we do them for Vishnu, then it's not binding. Karma nirbadhyate, one is bound by karma, that's sure. Natu ishwararadhanarthena karmana, but not activities that are intended to satisfy the Ishwara, God. Atas tad artham Vishnu prityartham. So therefore we're talking about doing something for Vishnu. Mukta sango nishkama san karma samyag achara. This is Sridhar Swami again. He says, therefore mukta sanga means to do something nishkama. Nishkama, we've heard this term throughout these initial chapters of Bhagavad Gita. Nishkama karma, very, very key term, which is elaborated at length by our acharyas in these beginning chapters, at least chapters 3 through 5, which deal with karma. So nishkama means activity, yes, I'm doing something, but I'm doing only things that are enjoined in scripture and I'm not interested in the result. That sort of activity is elevating. Now how does it elevate you? Does it take you to heaven? Well, if you're a fruitive worker, it does. But what happens if you're a mukta sangha? If you're not interested in the results, then what does it do? It purifies your heart. It purifies the heart. Therefore, twice in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, yajna dana tapaschaiva pavanani manishinaha. This pious activity is comprised largely of sacrifice, charity, austerity. And these things purify even the great souls. So it's a very important point. So, Sridhar Swami says, you should samyag achara, you should definitely and completely adopt this path of sankarma, performing satkarma means auspicious activities, that is to say, pious activities, which will elevate you. This is the idea. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur takes us a step further, quite a few steps further, as a matter of fact. He says, first of all, he cites Mahabharata, karmana badhyate jantuhu, all creatures in this world are bound by karma. And that is a fact. That is a fact. Generally, that's a fact. But at the same time, he says, Vishnu arpito nishkamo dharma eva yajna uchyate. Those activities that are offered to Lord Vishnu and which consist of selfless dharma, that only is called yajna. So he's giving a slightly different interpretation of the word here, or he's giving a second interpretation at least of the word yajna in this verse. Yajna means, in terms of sacrifice, it means only something dharmic that is offered to Vishnu without any personal interest. That's a very, very specific kind of activity, as we said in the beginning. It's not just work, which, you know, the English language is unfortunately unable to express in just one word. That we don't have one word for this concept. That's the problem. So, I'll read this again, because it's so important to have this idea. Vishnu arpito nishkamo dharma eva yajna uchyate. Yajna is, it's called yajna only if it is dharma that is selfless and offered to Vishnu. Only that is really dharma. This is the idea. Another way to see it is that it is only yajna if it is offered selflessly to Lord Vishnu and is dharma. These are different ways of seeing. So then he says, Tadrisha dharma siddhartham karma samachara. The instruction here is that you should begin, you should take up such work for the purpose of perfection of such dharma. In other words, we're talking about puro dharma, as we hear in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the doubt is raised here that, well, if I mean, the same doubts that we've heard already, He says, for example, what happens if I'm even offering my results of my activities to Lord Vishnu, but at the same time I do have some intention to get some cut for myself? Because this is what we do. We give some to Vishnu, we put some south. You see, that's called Mishra Bhakti. Karma Mishra, or more likely it's Vikarma Mishra Bhakti. A so-called Vikarma Mishra Bhakti. So then that's a good question. So he says, therefore he says, Eva Ityaha Mukta Sangha Phalakanksha Rahitaha. That means you do not have any desire. You've got to become selfless in this endeavor. Bhakti Yoga will purify you. It will purify you and bring you to that level of selflessness, even if you initially come with one of the four motives that Krishna names in chapter 9. But the idea is that really one should be putting it, giving all of it to Krishna. So then he quotes two verses from the from Srimad Bhagavatam in the 11th canto, chapter 20, texts, I think it's 10 and 11. Swadharmastho yajan yajnyer, performing yajnas while situated in one's own dharma. Anashi kama uddhava, O my dear Uddhava, without desiring the fruits, without having any desire that one, without having any agenda or any motive, so to speak. Nayati svarga narakao. He doesn't go either to heaven, nor does he go to hell. If one is an ordinary fruitive worker, then that desire for the fruit of going to heaven is very prominent in one's mind, and therefore one goes. But if one performs pious activity in Krishna consciousness, as it's being instructed here, then one does not necessarily go to heaven, because that's a big distraction for a devotee. It's a potential threat if one is not that stable yet in Krishna consciousness. And who's stable at anything in this yuga? So, swadharmastho yajan yajnir. Another thing here is that swadharmastho, one has to be situated in one's own dharma. Of the many instructions that Krishna repeats at least twice in Bhagavad Gita, this is one. Who knows the verse? Shreyan svadharma vigunaha paradharmat svanushtidat. It is better to do one's own duty, even if you're doing it imperfectly, than it is to do someone else's duty, even if you appear to be doing it perfectly, because it cannot be perfect. Why? Because it's not your dharma. That's a big topic which we don't need to get into. But it's kind of embedded here within these simple words, swadharmastha, to be situated in your own dharma and doing yajna without desires, Uddhava, then you don't have to go to svarga, neither do you have to go to hell. Because you're engaged in pious activity instead of so-called vikarma yoga, this is my neologism. Maybe someone else has said it before, I don't know, but sometimes in so-called Krishna consciousness we have this idea that if I engage in just any kind of activity, and especially some dubious activity, but I give the result to Krishna, then it's all purified. And we all go up. No. It doesn't work that way. Not so fast. Paramatma will tell you. Or Yamaraj will tell you. Either one. Depends on the variables. But the idea is that it is not just any kind of activity. You can, there is actually no such thing as Vikarma Yoga. You can have Karma Yoga. That is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita and elsewhere. It's even in the Srimad Bhagavatam. For which reason we should question, is it really fruitive activity? If it's mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which kicks out Kaitava Dharma at the very outset. So, you cannot perform, there's no such thing as Vikarma Yoga, so you cannot take dubious or sinful activities and engage those in Krishna consciousness. It doesn't work. Vikarma Yoga, so-called Vikarma Yoga, therefore means not yoga, but V-Yoga. From Vikarma, you get V-Yoga. And V-Yoga means separation. So when we say that worship and separation is the highest ideal in Krishna consciousness, that's not what we're talking about. It's more attuned to what Madhvacharya has called the Tamo Yogya Jiva. The jiva whose only qualification is for going to hell. So we don't want that. So, because he's engaged in pious activity, he does not go to hell. But because he doesn't want the result of that activity, he's also not going to heaven. So what happens? He only gets purified in heart. And that's a neutral, it's kind of a stasis, you might say, emotionally at least, or devotionally. It's a kind of a static position. You have to add something to that. And what you have to add to that is bhakti. The cultivation of devotional service. Transcendental, loving, devotional service under the Supreme Lord. Then you go back to Godhead. This is the wonder of Krishna consciousness. Yadi anyat na samacharet. This is the idea. Then he says, asmin loke, in this world, vartamanas svadharmastho anakaha shujihi. One should remain in this world, but he should remain situated in his own dharma. Thereby he becomes not only stainless, but also pure. This is the idea that we've been describing. And then he says, gyanam vishuddham apnoti. And that's the result from that is that you get purification of your existence through purification of your intelligence. In the Bhagavad Gita, in chapters 3 through 5, the Acharyas, generally they comment that the necessity of this karma yoga is such that it purifies our mundane existence. Because we've already described our mundane existence as scrambled. What did Ramanujacharya, he said? Sarvendriya vyakulata. All the senses are out of control. They're all in every which way they're going. Out of order in general. In general, especially in Kali Yuga, the whole situation is by default out of order. Everything is haywire. So, just to get some stability is actually quite an accomplishment. But if one engages in this pious activity and offering it in Krishna consciousness, then one is not a fruitive worker. And one is purified in heart, such that the knowledge that goes into the ears actually remains within the heart instead of out the other ear. Then whatever we hear from the Shastra, whatever we apply from the Shastra, it sticks. It remains. On the other hand, I like to say, Chanakya Kautilya said, if you do not practice the Shastra in this way, then that Shastra becomes poison. It becomes poison because you're using it in the wrong way. You're abusing it. Maybe the stronger word. So, the same doubts have been raised here. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, therefore the answer to this doubt that someone may think that if I'm engaging in devotional service but I have some desires, he says, therefore don't have desire. Mukta Sangha Samachara. You do it right. Well, that's a tall order, isn't it? Therefore we chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Cheto darpana marjanam bhavamaha ityadi. You all know the verse. These six things, or the seven things that are described in that verse from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they illustrate quite well why we need so much to chant the holy name in this day and age. It is not enough to know what to do, you have to have the strength to do it. And that has to come from outside. We don't have it within us most of the time. There are different levels of contamination that this age of Kali piles upon us. There's contamination from the environment, there's contamination from our associations, or our inadequate facilities, because as we've mentioned already, everything is haywire. And then there's stuff that we're bringing with us ourselves. Prabhupada once told some disciples that, Maybe he was asked, I don't remember now the details, maybe someone asked him, what is the greatest problem that we should expect our children to face in being raised in Krishna consciousness? And Prabhupada said that their worst problem is that they're going to have to associate with you. There's a more graphic story that I could tell that Srila Prabhupada told Paramananda Prabhu, but I'm not going to tell it because it's too graphic. But I think you get the idea. So, Baldevidabhushan, he now says, he puts his two cents in here. He says quite a few things. Actually, it's getting late now, so I think maybe I'm just going to... let's go straight to... Well, we can say this. Yeah, the same doubt is raised, and the same quotes are used. Karmana badhyate jantur. All beings are bound by karma, according to Mahabharata. So, if you're asking me to act, then that means I'm going to be bound, even if it's devotional service, because I know very well, just like many of us know very well, we're not necessarily pure, even though we're trying to do the right thing. So, in this verse, yajna means the Supreme Lord, yajna vai Vishnu. He's at least the third acharya to say that. Living entities in this world, ayam loka, they are bound by the actions of karma, or vikarma as the case may be, karma bandhana, because of the principle of enjoyment. Therefore the pivot is this, the pivotal principle. Who are you doing this for? If you are actually doing it for Vishnu, then there's no problem. But if you're actually doing it for yourself, then there's all the problems in the world. So that's the key point. And that gets back to the chanting principle we mentioned already. So therefore, perform all the good actions, as we've heard from predecessor acharyas, perform them for the pleasure of Lord Vishnu only. Give up the desire for personal happiness, mukta sangha, worship Vishnu through sacrifices and other prescribed means by lawfully obtained wealth, maintain yourself in this way, and you will not be bound. This is Krishna's promise. This promise will not come to you through ordinary karma. If you're performing ordinary karma kanda activity, the promise is not there. Where do we see an example of how easy it is to slip up, even if you're doing the right thing on the, for the right reason? Nariga is a very good example. King Nariga. He was a very dharmic king, and he was giving so much charity, unbelievable charity he was giving, and to fully qualified people. And he wasn't giving old sickly cows, just like in the West, you know, people come and donate their cars once they break down and are too much of a hassle. I give it to the temple. Anybody here familiar with the content of the Upanishads? Anyway, this principle goes back a long, long time. In the name of sacrifice, when something is useless, you give it this so-called sacrifice. That's not what we're talking about. That's not mukta sangha yajna. That is atmiya prayojana karma, as Ramanujan Acharya would put it. But here, because this is actually bhakti yoga in its initial phases. The initial phase of bhakti yoga is called karma yoga. And Krishna is therefore giving his promise. As he said already to Uddhava in the 11th canto, quoted by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Uddhava, you will not go to heaven because it's not what you want. You'll not go to hell because you're keeping your nose clean very carefully. You're only offering piety to Lord Vishnu. Therefore, where are you going to go? You're going to come to me. Shashratam padam avyayam. As he says in chapter 18. Matchitta sarva durgani. What is the rest of it? Matprasada tirishyasi atachetva mahankara nashrosyasi vinashyasi. He says, if you take shelter of me and depend upon me in this endeavor to somehow or other push yourself through karma, through jnana, and come to real bhakti, Madbhaktim Labhate Param, as it's described in chapter 18. That means bhakti without any passion and free from envy and free from ignorance. It generally takes some time. But Krishna promises, if you do this and take shelter of me sincerely, I will cover you at every step of the way. He's called Turandhara, one of the maybe obscure names of Vishnu. You're familiar with this? Turandhara. He bears your burden. Turandhara means the bearer of burden. And it's the name of Lord Vishnu. We all have so many burdens. Lord Vishnu will take it. This is the wonder of Krishna's mercy and the essence of this wonderful invitation that Bhagavad Gita comprises. So, that brings us to Srila Prabhupada's purport. Now, the beginning paragraph of Prabhupada's purport is actually very complicated. It's not so easy. The second part of the purport is a little bit more straightforward. The reason is that, as I mentioned in the beginning, generally in modern society, and especially in Western society, we simply do not have an adequate concept of what is dharma. What is dharma? Because we do not understand what dharma is, therefore we cannot understand what karma is, and therefore it's very difficult to put all these verses together. And it especially doesn't make sense when we say that, well, karma yoga is the same thing as bhakti yoga, but they're different, and it's very confusing. The Vedic literatures are in fact full of contradictions in various places. That's a given. According to the Mahabharata and even Vedanta Sutra itself, Tartako Pratishtha Shruta Yoga Bhinna Na Savrasya Yasyamatam Nibhinnam Dharmasya Tatvasya Nihitam Guhayam Mahajano Yena Gata Sapantha. To try to figure out what the Shastras are telling us independently is virtually impossible, because they appear to be contradictory. In some cases, they actually are contradictory. Not in purpose, but in approach. And, in fact, a person cannot even become established as a rishi or as a teacher without saying something different. Those who have gone through the university system know that you do not get your doctorate until you say something that nobody else has said. So, dharmasya tatvasya, the real truth of religion, the real truth of dharma, rather, is that thing which is held only within the heart of the pure devotee. Therefore, whatever path that pure devotee points out, that's the path you should take. And this is the significance of Prabhupada's statements here in the second paragraph. This is the great art of doing work. One has to work in Krishna consciousness to satisfy Krishna or Vishnu, and while performing such activities, one is in a liberated stage. In the beginning, this process requires very expert guidance. One should therefore act very diligently under the expert guidance of a devotee of Lord Krishna, etc. Okay, these are just a few things. There's so much more, as I indicated in the beginning. I think we can go for maybe a month, at least a week, with this verse, because it's that rich. But if anybody has any questions or comments, we can maybe discuss some of those now. Yes, Prabhu.
I had to ask this question.
Microphone on here.
So is there pravishta karna randhira? This sloka which comes in Bhagavatam, where it's mentioned that pravishta karna randhira, that Krishna enters the ear and clears the accumulation of dust within the heart of a self-realized soul. So now that seems to be a little bit contradictory to me, that when a person is self-realized, how he can have accumulation of dust of lust or anything in his heart, which Krishna has to purify by entering his ears. So yes. What does this word self-realized mean in this?
Yeah, this is a very good question. It appears contradictory to you, but to me it appears entirely consistent with everything that I've said in this class. So I'll explain. Jnana. Self-realization is the process of becoming fixed in jnana, becoming fixed in what we call jnana nishtha, atma jnana. We're fixed in that. That is self-realization. It is a flat state. It's a neutral state in which you do not identify with the body, neither have you depth of realization as to what this Krishna bhakti is all about. So you're neither absorbed in the foolishness of Maya nor in the transcendental duality of Krishna consciousness. You're in a static state, so to speak. And that is because of the nature of jnana. Jnana literally does not mean knowledge, just in exactly the same way that karma does not just mean work. Jnana means a specific thing. It means awareness. Jnana. To be aware, to be conscious of something. That is jnana. And that is necessarily not practical. Because it's not practical, it's a hypothetical situation to be in. Because of that, it cannot give any vent to the natural urge of the soul to be active or to engage in duality, for that matter, or to seek, even to go further, society, friendship, and love. So it creates a vacuum, sort of an artificial stasis in which one is really frustrated, in effect. Because of that frustration, one cannot remain in that jnana-nishtha stage. We've seen that there have been many, many non-devotees who have expressed wonderful realization of Brahman, or even of Atma-jnana. And they're not even necessarily Hindu. It's a universal phenomenon. But without coming to Krishna consciousness, you cannot sustain that problem. Therefore, you will fall. And there may also be some residual contamination in one's samskaras. That is to say, the predispositions that one has inherited as a result of the acquired nature that goes along with this body at the time of birth. Samskara. So there may be some small amount of contamination also, but that will be destroyed. Now that situation in jnana-nishtha is nonetheless necessary, and it's the fruit of the purification of the heart that should result from progressive pious activity as mentioned in this chapter, especially if it's dedicated to Lord Krishna. The devotees, they go through the same process as the karmis and the jnanis, but it's within Krishna consciousness. That's the key to understand. Devotees are in a special, you know, embassy state from A to Z, and they never have to undergo the same kind of developments as do the karmis and the jnanis. So generally though, the principle is that if one is not pure at heart, then the jnana is not going to help that much, although it provides one with the intelligence to understand that he needs to advance, you see. Therefore one falls down, and because everything around one is of the materialistic stripe of association, he generally falls back into sense gratification. But a person can get valid realization of the self to some degree and for some time, even if he's not free from fruitive activities or from even this sinful contamination. Is that okay? Is it enough?
I was just thinking that self-realization, is it possible that a devotee also, we hear that we are servants of Krishna, so we accept that, and in that sense a devotee is somewhat self-realized, he has a theoretical understanding, and then when he hears about Krishna, the sense of relationship with Krishna is more revealed by this process of hearing more and more about Krishna? Is that an understanding?
Well, we could see it that way. It really depends on exactly how we're going to choose to define that term self-realization. Because, like the term liberation, well, there's 1,000 different kinds of liberation. There's at least 5 or 6. And so we sometimes have to be a little more specific about what our terms mean. Anything else? Yes.
Can we,
I pass the microphone.
To understand clearly this point, what Prabhuji is asking, can we have the example of four Kumaras when they were coming to Vaikuntha, all the Shukdev Goswami, where they self-realize and they get into bhakti?
I would rather use, for our reference, the case of Bilhamangala Thakur. Because Bilhamangala Thakur, he was previously initiated as a Shaiva, and he was on this Smarta path, and he had actually undergone the ordinary process of purification through simply pious activities, such that his heart was praya purified. Praya means for the most part. And he was fixed in some degree of atmagyan. But because you can't be completely freed from contamination in this world, especially by those processes, somehow or other, by his association or by his past samskaras, he fell down again. So that might be a more relevant example. Anything else? Yeah, Vijay Prabhu.
Is Yamunacharya, Yadavadi Mamachetu Krishna Vidaravinda, he's a Paramahamsa pure devotee. He says, whenever sex desire entered my mind, I spit at the thought. So he's a pure devotee. Still there's some desire, but he just spits at the thought. And Prabhupada once said that anybody that has a material body will have some, there'll be some desire there also.
Yeah.
But still you can be self-realized.
Therefore I said praya, as Bhagavatam also says, nasha praishu abhadras. The abhadra things are going to be there. I mean, let's consider this a little more deeply, because it is an interesting point. If we go to the end of chapter 14 in Bhagavad Gita, I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm looking at chapter 14, text 22. Prakasham cha pravrittim cha moham eva cha pandava na dveshti sampravrittani na nivrittani kangshati. Now, in these four or five verses here, Krishna is describing what he says is Brahman realization, which is the topic of our discussion. He's describing Brahman realization, but in the initial verse of that description of the characteristics of this Brahman realization, he says a person is not, you know, he does not hanker after three things when they're there, neither does he lament when those three things are not there, and those three things are very significant. They are prakasha, pravritti, and moha. Prakasha means sattva-guna, knowledge, illumination. Pravritti means rajoguna, activity, busyness. And moha means tamoguna, ignorance. That means that these things are going to be there, implicitly. They're going to come, and they're going to go, and you just have to let them pass. It's an interesting thing to consider, isn't it? Maybe it's a disturbing thing to consider. But at the same time, it should give us some hope, because we're trying to become Krishna conscious, and no matter what we do, it seems like, you know, so there's still, we get in the mode of ignorance sometimes, we get in the mode of passion sometimes, we get in the mode of goodness sometimes. It seems as if it will always be that way to some degree, at least. So we have to get used to that, and we have to, the point is, Krishna says here, you check out of that identification, and that is your liberation. You no longer identify with it. Let the dogs bark, the caravan will pass. the dogs meaning, you know, all these mental stuff that we are now so much bewildered by.
It's like, pour your mind on what you thought of his tongue.
Yeah, exactly.
Desires accomplished, let them go.
Yeah.
The Prabhupada said, but, like one devotee said, Prabhupada, we have a strong desire to distribute your books. Prabhupada said, don't let that desire go.
Well,
so
that,
there's some desires we keep, and other desires we let them go.
And that is the principle of today's verse. Yajnyarthat karnamano anyatra loko yam karma bandhana. The anyatra is, in some respects, is the central word of the verse. Because otherwise, if you're not doing it for Vishnu, then for sure, karma is always bondage. All karma. Sridhar Swami, I believe it was, he makes the very emphatic point that this is the one single exception to that rule. Devotional service to Lord Vishnu. It is the one single exception. This is the desire that you can fanatically hang on to. This is the activity that you can determine yourself forever to stick with. Devotional service. Therefore, Prabhupada said one should perform devotional service as if in the mode of passion. Not in the mode of passion. Then it becomes karma mishra bhakti. But as if in the mode of passion, it means the degree of attachment is just as strong as any karmi has for his materialistic pursuits. Therefore, we see somebody like, say, Steve Jobs. Everybody's talking about him nowadays. You know, great man in the mundane world. I mean, it's all for naught ultimately in that sphere. But still, we can gain some inspiration from that in devotional service, because whatever you can do in that realm, it's also applicable here. Okay. Anything else? Yeah.
Goswami says in that kind of devotion, this Krishnartham Akhil Chesta, is it the same thing as this? Yagyarthart Vishnu, the same thing?
Yeah.
This, that means that Srila Goswami is referring to Karma Yoga or Bhakti Yoga there?
Well, yeah, I kind of hinted at the very end that there really isn't a distinction between the two. Or more to fine tune that, I would say, there's a distinction, but it's not a distinction at the same time. And that's called the Chinta Bheda Bheda Tattva. And you're going to run into that brick wall at every step in Krishna consciousness, so you might as well get used to it. Bhakti, you know, I mean, prema as our prayojana, prema bhakti, is a different thing than karma yoga that we're talking about here, generally. But at the same time, they're all bhakti yoga. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has elsewhere given a very nice analogy that helps us understand this. He says, you've got many different kinds of mangoes. There's a red mango, which has a very sweet, ripe taste, and then there's a green mango, which may be a little bit bitter, but they're both mangoes, you see. And it's just a process of maturation that distinguishes them. And the same is here. In bhakti yoga, to begin from this level that Krishna is talking about in terms of karma yoga, excuse me, it's like a green mango. It's entry level Krishna consciousness. And then prema bhakti is the ultimate prayojan in our line, as taught by the gopis. So they're one and the same, inconceivably. That's the idea. We don't try to figure it out because you really can't try to figure it out. Achintu kalu ye bhava natan stardikeni yojiye. It's not appropriate to run things that are beyond the ken of human understanding through that mundane logic. It's just not appropriate. So, that's the point here, I think. Is that clear? Okay. Anything else? Otherwise, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.